Let's talk about all the good news. Let's talk about this amazing landmark case now in Idaho. Tell us how you were able to get that going, who worked on it for how long, what kind of shenanigans were going on. I know that you had support with a representative, so let's hear all about that.
So it's actually law now. So what happened was, I and some other local Idahoan warrior moms many years ago teamed up and we founded an organization called Health Freedom Idaho. And I'm a founding board member. And Misty Carlfeld and Sarah Clendenin are my warrior sisters in arms. They are just amazing. They're the ones who've been on the ground for years, going to the Capitol, testifying, following the legislation, because they live 3 hours. They live in Boise. I'm 3 hours away, so I can't just be there every day, you know? And for years, I've been talking about the importance of getting rid of any mandates. And of course, the last 5 years really impressed upon me and everybody, I think, who's half awake, the imperative of addressing this issue. So I talked with Misty and I said, you know, I really want to bring a Medical Freedom Act. I want to write the Idaho Medical Freedom Act. Who do you think would sponsor it? And she said, well, I think Senator Dan Forman might sponsor it. So she got a conference call with him and we were on the phone for an hour and a half. I told him what my idea was. This was probably July of 2024. And I told him the whole plan, what I wanted to do. And he said, I love it. Write the bill, and if I like the bill, I'll sponsor it. I'll carry it for you. So I wrote the bill, and I did something which was very, very useful. And that is, I looked at any existing statute that might support our case. And Idaho actually in 2023 had passed the Coronavirus Stop Act, which was a bill that prohibited any C cocktail mandates in the state of Idaho. Except for hospitals, because the Supreme Court ruled that those were okay. Leaving that aside, because that's insanity, but that's what the Supreme Court ruled, and so we're bound by it. So I thought, well, what if I just take this existing statute and kind of broaden it a bit? So I took that and I actually broadened it to every medical intervention. So I
Perfect.
didn't just do it a bit. I literally said that no medical mandates are, that all medical mandates are prohibited in the state of Idaho, except for the C cocktails and flu cocktails in hospitals because they take CMS funds and are covered in that Supreme Court case. So I just thought, you know, let's do this. Let's expand it out. Let's make it as broad as we possibly can. And he
Yes.
loved it. Yeah, and he loved it. And so he sponsored it and he got it print. He got the bill printed in January of this year, when the legislative session began. And then February 5th, he invited me to come and present to the Idaho Senate State Affairs Committee. I actually presented the legislation, the bill to the committee, and then I stood for questions. And it was amazing. It was truly amazing. And I got to talk about the, you know, the primacy of the individual and that it's imperative that all medical interventions be voluntary because no one else knows our medical history or backgrounds. No one else knows what's best for us medically. And most importantly, no one else has to live with the consequences of our choices. I mean,
Perfect.
how can someone pretend to claim that authority? I just don't get it. And so anyway, I felt like I was so able to talk from a position of real power and authority because I'm right.
That's right.
Because it's true, because
Yes.
it's good, because it's all that is good, right? Everyone who says, oh, but the community, but this and that, the community is made of individuals.
Right.
And to me, the primacy of the individual trumps all. And so it was wonderful. It was an amazing experience. And we made it out of that committee. And I was so happy. I wasn't sure if we would make it out of that committee, but we did. And then it went to the floor of the Senate and it passed the Senate. And then it went over to the House and we got a sponsor by the name of Representative Rob Biswanger, who is literally a knight in shining armor. He sponsored it and he invited me to come to Boise again. I forget if it was late April or late February or early March, but I went and I presented to the House Health and Welfare Committee. And stood for questions again. And boy, did I get a grilling there with they had basically gotten all of their talking points together, those who opposed it. And they were being I believe they were being coached by some education associations in the country because they were all saying the same thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Super lice, super lice. What about super lice? Kids can't be sent home if they have super lice. I'm like, what is super lice?
Oh, gosh.
And they can't be forced to take, if they have pink eye, they can't be forced to take an antibiotic. And I'm like, no. Can they be sent home? Well, of course they can be sent home. We haven't said anything about that. They can be sent home. There's code that says that sick kids can be sent home, and we're not touching that code. But they kept harping on about this, on and on. I was like, what's going on with this? Well, we finally found out because, well, let me just say the bill then made it through that committee, and literally Rob Weiswanger and I cried. We were literally crying because we were so excited. And one of the things that we had, on our side was that all those people on those committees had to sit there and they had to look at my friend Doug Cameron. Do you know who Doug Cameron is? Have you heard of him?
I have, but tell me more.
So he was actually a friend of my father. My father's passed on, which is why I say was. They had been friends for decades. My dad was an avid hunter, and he used to go and hunt down on Doug's property and in the area where he lives. Well, Doug worked for a dairy in kind of southwestern Idaho, and he was fairly high up and had like 100 men under him or something like that. And his boss had cancer. And he said to Doug, I want you to go and here's a list. I'm going to have somebody come to give C cocktails to everybody next week. I want you to get everybody to sign up. And he's like, I'm not taking it. I don't want to take that. And his boss was like, well, you're taking it, Doug. I want you to take it. You need to set an example for everybody, and I need to be protected, and on and on and on, and really coerced him into getting it. And in order to set an example for all of the others. Well, his boss is dead and gone.
Oh.
And Doug is paralyzed from the diaphragm down and will sit in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. And he came to every meeting. He
Wow.
drove an hour plus, hour and a half to get there in his wheelchair to come and be there at every single committee presentation and floor vote that he could come to. I mean, it was amazing. And so it shocks me that people could vote against it, but some people did with him sitting there. I mean, it's just, how can you possibly think that that's acceptable?
That's absolutely shocking.
Like how hard is your heart
Yeah.
that you're okay to do that for the theoretical benefit of someone else?
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. It really
Yeah.
is.
So
So
let
it,
me,
yeah, so
yeah,
can
so let me
you
tell you. So what happened was we made it through everything. And it passes the House, which means it's now passed both the Senate and the House. And we're just praying and hoping and crossing our fingers and doing everything. And everybody is telling us the governor's going to sign it. The governor's going to sign it. Everything is okay. Everybody's saying that, the smart money thinks that the governor's going to sign it. And literally, like an hour and a half before he was supposed to sign it on Saturday, March 29th, he called Senator Forman and said, I'm vetoing the bill. His first veto of the session.
Oh.
And I was just like, you can't imagine the emotions, right? I'm like, I was standing up there for 30, 35, even maybe even 40 minutes presenting in an official,
Yeah.
forum, and then standing for questions about a legis, you know, this is a big thing. It's a huge honor. So like you're just up and down, and then we would win, and then this, I'm so down, and I'm just like, wow. And he says, I speak with Senator Forman. He said, the governor issued a statement with his veto that said that he was worried that sick kids couldn't be sent home from school. And I was like,
It's not even.
we don't say anything about that. We don't touch that code. Why would he say that? It makes no sense. But that was actually really a mistake because that was ultimately his undoing. So what happened was on Monday morning, Senator Forman asked me for whatever language needed to be inserted into the bill to address the governor's purported claims. And I did that. I texted it to him. I emailed it to him. He gave me his assurances that he would not move forward without me. They were going to redraft the bill just to address this one issue. And he gave me his assurances that he would not move forward without my say so, without my approval of the language. He went and met with the governor's office and carved out daycares. And I was outraged. I didn't find out until after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He didn't speak to me. he had Representative Beiswenger call me, who then texted me, you know, like screenshots of the, or just like, you know, pictures of the bill. And I'm like, what? And I was like, texting Senator Foreman, this is evil. We can't do this. We cannot purchase the freedom of people with the health and well-being of our children. You're ransom. I mean, I was, this is what I was thinking. You're ransoming our children. Like, no, I cannot be part of this. I cannot be part of this. This is awful. You don't know what you're doing. I don't know why he agreed to it. He promised me he wouldn't then. He said, we don't have to move forward. And I said, don't, please don't. What are you doing? He went and presented it in committee without my knowledge or consent. Wow. And with this daycare carve out. And then I talked to him late that night, and I was reeling. I was just shocked. I was like, I can't be associated with something like this. I mean, I will not ever use children, babies under threes as a human shield for adults or anyone else. I was flipping. The next morning, the House came to the rescue, Rob Beiswenger and Assistant Majority Leader Josh Tanner, and they said, we'll bring our own bill. So Senator Foreman introduced something called SB 1210, and then the House brought HB, House Bill 472, and 472 was identical to my original bill with the language that the governor said.
Give me 1 second, Leslie. She needs to go potty. I just let her out for one. Give me 1 second. Hubby, sure. Take care of her. Hang on. Come on. She's just a year old. She's still getting her lifestyle. No worries. They're organized. So
I understand.
So basically
what happens is Senator Foreman introduces this terrible bill. The House comes to the rescue and introduces a fantastic bill that has only additional language addressing the governor's concern. So it's my identical original bill with the assurances that sick kids can be sent home. And it passes. They put it through, you know, they introduce it in committee on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, they put it through the whole House and it passes. And we're thinking, yay, this is so great. And I'm just so upset. And Senator Foreman stopped speaking to me after that. He refused to speak to me, never spoke to me again after that call on Monday night. And he keeps pushing on his bill. So then we, and, you know, my sisters at Health Freedom Idaho, Misty and Sarah, we are just gathering the troops, and we have all these organizations nationwide helping us in their state chap, you know, with their state chapters and stuff. And we're just bombarding it. And we're like, kill SB 1210, you know, yes on 472. And then we get word that the Senate is refusing to hear the House bill. They won't hear it. And so the House says to us, the leadership in the House say, you know, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to kill it? Do you want us to kill 1210? And I was just like, oh my gosh, what do I do? I mean, it was just so heavy. And we were back and forth and back and forth. And on Thursday, we just thought, you know, we don't have much choice, but we were on the phone. Like we were literally never had a phone out of our hand or in our, you know, in our, against our ear for literally 2.5, 3 weeks. It was insane. We were on the phone for 6 hours that night talking about our strategy and what we should do. And what we realized was there was a real problem, because during this legislative session, the legislature had brought a bunch of what are called rules, administrative rules from the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare into the code to make them law. But they hadn't done a proper review of them. And those rules used to refer to other rules. Now, they're arguing that it's going to be good because now they're in statute and code where the legislature can address them. The problem is then it takes a vote of both houses and all these things, you know, to make it happen. And there was no time to review all of them. And so one of the things that we didn't realize until the very end on Thursday was that they had brought in this new rule into code in this new bill that will take effect July 21st. So we couldn't even see it yet. Like, we didn't know it all, that said that whenever there's a disease outbreak, unvaccinated children can be excluded, but it didn't define disease or outbreak. So we were panicking, like, what does this mean? And we just went to sleep so distraught, not knowing what to do. And then I said in the morning, I thought, I don't know if Dan Foreman is going to do something else. We didn't know. I texted the assistant majority leader and said, you know, listen, I'm going to support the bill reluctantly, but I'm going to testify against it. And here's why. Or I said, can you call me so I can explain it? And so he called me. This is like 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning. And he said, what do you want? You tell me what you want me to do and we will insert it into the bill, or we'll kill the bill, whatever you want, you tell us. And so I said, listen, there's this language. It's not defined. Can unvaccinated kids be sent home because someone else has pink eye? Can they be sent home because someone else has a sore throat or the flu? What, you know, like, this is awful. We can't do this. So he and I, he's like, okay, let's put some language together. And we, on the phone, drafted language that says that no healthy, unvaccinated individual may be excluded when there is a disease outbreak of any kind, Peggy. So no one can be sent home because other people are sick.
Right.
This is revolutionary. Like, this is nowhere any, I mean, the bill was already revolutionary, but this is even more amazing. And then he, on his own, Josh Tanner, inserted into the bill, we talked about it, and he's like, I'm going to put something else in there, that no new rules or regulations or code may be promulgated by any state agency which contravene this bill.
Wow, that's powerful.
Peggy, that means that if the governor in the future issues an emergency, no state agency may issue anything to implement it. So we are actually protected against the authoritarian overreach that we experienced during the last 5 years. And our governor was not good. He was very bad. And then he lied about it. He locked us down. He did all sorts of things. And then he said he didn't do it when he ran for reelection. So this is huge. I mean, it is huge. And all I can say is all the power and all the glory to the highest, because I just, when I would meditate and pray in the mornings and at night, I would just be told, trust, trust, you need to trust. Even though I would be freaking out and losing my mind, and I had 3 hours of sleep every night. And you know what? In the end, we actually got a better bill than the first bill I wrote, because Rob Biswanger and Josh Tanner and Mike Moyle, who's the Speaker of the House, really helped us. And they held strong until the very, very end, and we got something fantastic. And I think at that point, it would have been just impossible for the governor to not sign it.
Well, that's just amazing. And everyone's giving you a standing ovation, Leslie. It is such a shot in the arm for our...
Yes. Yeah, so let me just say what this means. I want to explain so people understand.
Boil it
we
down.
Broadly defined medical intervention. It means no medication, no device.
Right, exactly.
No device, no medication, no drug, no injection, no chip, no medical intervention that affects the biological functioning of the body may be mandated in the state of Idaho in order to live a normal life, meaning to get an education, to go to a business, to seek entertainment, to be employed, to engage in public life. No more. The only carve out is the hospitals, the businesses that take Medicaid and Medicare funding.
So that's the part about the federal law, because that was what some people had brought up, where the following point says, except, or what does it say exactly?
Well, there's two things. The federal law actually
required by federal law. Yeah.
And the thing about required by federal law relates to people who actually travel abroad. There are foreign countries that may require it. And in that situation, they can not go, or, you know, I mean, we're complying with other countries' law. And so,
yeah. Okay.
I can't imagine an employer forcing someone to do that, but that's what it's about. That and the Supreme Court case from 2022.
Okay.
So those we haven't been able to get around yet, but.
Well, I want to underline that too, because that's important, because the federal government does not have the authority to tell a state what to do regarding public health, period. The only time is when it's interstate or the United States with other countries, which is why it was so bizarre when New York was stopping people traveling from New Jersey or something. I mean, on the interstate, and they tried to impose these federal laws of going traveling interstate. But I just want to make that really clear, because people will point at Trump in 2020. And obviously there were a lot of things that many of us don't agree with, but he wasn't responsible for shutting down your state. The governors in 100%. Each state shut down the state. And as you say, they followed that legislation that came in after the Patriot Act, which is why they all were working in lockstep. They probably were getting their marching orders from the WHO or the Governors Association. They were all literally following the same playbook. They called it a playbook, but the federal government does not have that authority. So that was a concern of some of my viewers when I brought the news earlier. And so that's important to just let everyone know that has to do if you're traveling to another country and that country is requiring something, the laws in the state of Idaho don't apply.
Exactly. So no, remember how I mentioned earlier that we sued over the mask mandate because
yes.
the federal government doesn't have that power or authority. The states have health rights, and that's why all cocktail mandates are state laws and not federal laws. So I'm not concerned about that at all because the federal government does not have any authority to dictate anything that happens in the state with respect to health issues. So no, it's for this very, very narrow situation.
Yeah, that is really, really exciting. You know, Leslie, that took a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, happy and sad. And how can people that are feeling overwhelmed, that are feeling weary from this fight, that maybe don't live in Idaho and they're living in a state like New York or California or Maine or others that are so shut down, that are not only, they're moving in the wrong direction, they're taking away existing exemptions. What words of encouragement can you give to people when they feel there's no stopping this train of tyranny coming?
Come to Idaho. I mean, I'm going to say something very sobering. And I only say it because I really don't have any other answer. You mentioned that people have been moving to Idaho since probably 2016, 2017, which was after SB 277 and 76 passed, right? That is true. And if you look at the Idaho population has grown by a third in the last 6 or 7, 8 years. We're now at 2 million people, much to my dismay. But you know what? I'd rather have it be filled with liberty-minded Americans than only a million people. And so what's happened is if you look at this sort of influx of people, 4 to 1, they are moving here for the freedom. This is the most liberty-oriented legislative session that has ever happened in the state of Idaho. And it's only going to grow. Let me tell you, the next session, I think, is going to surpass this in a long way because those legislators are fired up. They all know people who had injuries. They all know that the federal government lied to them, or not all of them, but a huge number of them do, right? A big, big portion of them. And they're fired up. They really, truly are. They are empowered. They are inspired. They are doing what the people want. And that's only going to grow. Whereas I think if you're in a place, as you said, that's going the wrong direction, they think they're resisting something. They think they're, you know, I think that they just think as long as it's, I don't know why health freedom or medical autonomy should be deemed right wing, but they have somehow successfully done that. I mean, I was a granola crunching lefty mom when I was 25 years ago. That's where I was. And now I'm like, you know, I don't know. I just care about freedom. That's all I care
exactly.
about.
Exactly. I care about truth. It doesn't have a political party.
Exactly. I'm not in a party. I just totally believe in freedom. I was going to joke that I'm like, you know, an anarcho-capitalist at this point, but I don't really believe in anything except freedom and
right.
truth.
Exactly.
And kindness. And
right.
All that is good. That is what inspires me to do what I just seek to do good. So anyway, the problem is that those people in Maine, they feel that they are resisting something really horrible. And I'm not saying that Trump doesn't do bad things. I think he does. There are lots of things I disagree with him, but he's also done some great things. But my point is that they use him as a proxy for all of us to hate and resist all of us, even though this should be a bipartisan issue. And I don't think that's going to get better. I mean, I wish I could offer words of encouragement, but if you look at what's happening, I'm just going to say it this way. The red states are getting redder and the blue states are getting bluer. And I just don't see that changing because the people who are moving to Idaho are moving here for freedom for themselves and for their children. We have the best cocktail exemption in the nation. You just write on a piece of paper that my child is exempt for religious or other reasons and you submit that. That's it.
All it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So not even, yeah, it's more just like record keeping. It's not asking
no.
permission or anything.
Yeah. And so, but my point is that people are moving here for that, but people are also moving here just for, a different, because they actually feel that they're part of the social fabric. And I think this is really important for people to understand. There are people, Secretary of State, former Secretary of State, John Kerry said that the First Amendment is a problem. Nancy Pelosi has said that the First Amendment is a problem. So is Hillary Clinton. I think Nancy Pelosi said that too. For sure, Hillary Clinton and John Kerry said that. When that is how people feel about our founding documents, what do we really have in common anymore? I mean, if you believe that it's an impediment to controlling the populace, then I don't really have a lot to say to you. And so I don't think that pendulum has swung. It's not going to swing to the middle for a while. I think it's going to continue. We're going to, maybe pendulum's the wrong, metaphor. We're going to keep bifurcating. We're going to keep siloing ourselves into places where we do have a social fabric upon which we agree, and until there's some kind of breaking point, I think.
Well, a lot of good does come out of this, Leslie, because I think there are a couple of things I really want to underline as we're wrapping up here. Number one, it's just a reminder to people that each state is individual and sovereign, creates its own laws. I think over these last several years, there was an intentional blurring of the lines as if the president, regardless of which one was in office at the time, had these superpowers to tell you what to do, to tell you to close your business, to tell you to cover your face or become a human pincushion. And that got really blurred. And people were forgetting that this was a local issue. I mean, the localist, it could be even the state boards of health were filtering information down to the local boards of health, and that's where the fight really needs to be, or the battle or the defense. So I think this is really great that we are seeing how the states are shaping up differently, and that you have the right, or that you have the ability, for some people they have the ability to move, or we all have the right to choose. And so I think that is really important, and it's a wonderful example of the power of the states. And seeing Idaho, I didn't follow the last election, but it sounds like the representatives were who were in favor of medical autonomy and freedom in general were put into place. So that's another wonderful example of our political system. Now, definitely there's corruption. We all have experienced it, but in my view, it is a system worth saving, and the principles and the ideals are worth fighting for. Absolutely. So I think that's great.
And Peggy, can I say, I think to your point, passing the Idaho Medical Freedom Act, as we go and we get other states to pass it, because that's what we're going to do now. As we go and we do that, we are going to highlight the states that are going the other direction, right? They are going to get boxed out to some extent. And ultimately, they're going to be forced to embrace these common sense human rights principles, right? I mean, it's so common sense, it's ridiculous to even discuss it, but I think that's what kind of happens, you know?
Well, I'm part-time in Florida for many of these reasons that you're talking about. And it, the oppression and the hostility in California, it's really quite overwhelming. So yeah, I would love to talk to you about this bill. I don't know if you have anybody working on it in Florida or what have you, but friends, that's something that you can do when we talk about taking action. The number one action, I think, for everybody is to make those choices that make sense for you. So often people want a knight in shining armor to sweep in to take care of everything, kind of like you did. You took care of it for us, and we're so grateful. But there were others that were working alongside you, and all of the millions of people that stood up and did the right thing, that defended their freedom, that made choices and had to suffer the consequences of losing their job, of not being able to travel, of maybe the children decide adult children were no longer going to go to a college that was discriminating against them, but they still have their dignity and their integrity intact. And so making choices, individual choices that make sense for you, that's an action that we can all take that does not require any national movement. It does not require any special skills or knowledge other than I am going to do what's right for me. And then friends, another action that you can take is to share this video, support the work that Leslie's doing. I'll have a link for you in the description box about the health freedom. Let me just grab that right here. And all of her websites, but healthfreedomdefense.org. And there are wonderful resources there. I think that increasing your knowledge is an amazing step that everyone can take. She's provided this information for free. And there are so many ways that you can increase your knowledge, which will make you feel more powerful. So rather than feeling like you're a victim and you're being oppressed by the oppressors, learn about your rights and stand in your freedom. And those are simple actions that, well, they're maybe not easy, but they're simple and they don't cost money. And it's something that everyone can do. And that's empowering. Don't let the tyrants steal your soul, steal your joy, make you feel like you're a victim, because then that gives them more power. That gives them the power over you. So stand in your power. Here we go.
I think the last thing I want to say is, you know, have you ever been to a performance and it's really fantastic, and then all of a sudden, one person stands up. And as soon as that one person does, then another one will stand, and then another. Usually it's a couple, two, three. And then before you know it, the whole room generally rises. It just takes that one person to inspire others. And I just encourage every single person watching to know that you do have the power to take a stand for yourself, and you do have the power to inspire others, and your action will do that. I think it's, you know, it's that quote from Margaret Mead that, you know, never underestimate the power of a small group of individuals to make a difference. It's the only thing that ever has. It's true. It's so true. And we're going to have a lot more resources on our website coming soon about how to help people learn how to engage more, how to advocate for themselves and things like this. And we're actually putting together a national action plan on, bringing the Medical Freedom Act to other states to help people to pass it in their own states. So it's very exciting.
Wonderful. That is exciting, Leslie. You know, we're right on the cusp of these, whispers out there about the bird flu and, you know, measles and all of that. But I don't think they'll ever be able to hogwash us like they did in the early days. People are aware, they're awake, they have suffered in many cases, you know, the ultimate consequences and loss.
But so Peggy, they were trying with bird flu. Think about egg prices and all this stuff. They were trying. And actually, I mean, I have to give credit to the USDA secretary and the HHS secretary, because they basically, you know, called out, said that they thought that this was dangerous, was going to make things worse. And they basically put the kibosh on rolling out that shot, which I think was not only going to go to all of the farm animals, but ultimately to people. So there's definitely some good stuff happening, and people should be encouraged by that, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely a step in the right direction. I can't imagine all those poor little chicks getting vaccinated. The whole concept is very distressing to me.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, let's focus on all of these wins. Thank you so much, Leslie, for your time, for your perseverance, for your accomplishments, for being the voice all these years, 20 years, 20 plus years. And it really does buoy us up. And look forward. We'll have to have another conversation going
forward.
That'd
be great.
And again, congratulations. And friends, I'll have links for you in the description box below. I'll also have a write-up on my Substack, which is peggyhall.substack.com. And be sure to stay tuned for an upcoming broadcast.